to Fancy Town Crimes Podcast, a podcast about crimes in fancy towns told by middle-class broads.
Hi guys, Megan here. Before we start the episode, I wanted to talk to you about a company called You Wander. It's a social enterprise shaping tourism to be inclusive and sustainable. The company provides educational and wellness travel experiences to individuals, organizations, and communities, focusing on honoring the BIPOC community, women, and immigrant stories. Their mission is to inspire inclusive travel and wellness that honors all walks of life. You Wander is a family-run business managed by Wani Munoz, headquartered in Lawrence, Massachusetts, with strong family roots in the Dominican Republic. And just as a little aside, I know Wani personally. We both started our careers teaching at the same school. She's an incredible woman, which is why we're so excited that she's being able to branch out and bring her program into the business world. She does so much good for the community. So Fancy Town Crimes is fully supporting her in this endeavor. Her business is set to open its doors in January 2021. So join us in welcoming You Wander into the world through their virtual business shower on Thursday, November 12th from 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. The event will include artistic performances, a business presentation from the founder, Wani, and some awesome raffle prizes, like a JetBlue travel certificate and virtual yoga. The evening's goal is to raise $10,000 to support the official launch of You Wander in just a few short weeks, January 2021. You Wander Inc. is registered with the Shine Registry, a website supporting female founders fund their entrepreneurial dreams. Know that any amount that you're willing to give will be going to an excellent business, and the night is sure to be entertaining. You can find more information at www.youwanderinc.com, and that's the letter U, Wander, W-A-N-D-E-R, Inc, I-N-C.com, or on their Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook at You Wander Inc. And again, that's the letter U. As always, Fancy Town Crimes will be providing links in the show notes as well as on our Instagram page. So go ahead and RSVP to the event at welcomeyouwanderinc.eventbrite.com to join the fun. Thanks all. Enjoy the episode. All right. Well, hello, everyone.
Hey, guys.
Second time is the charm. We just had a blooper reel to add to the every blooper reel we ever have.
We probably should start collecting blooper reels. I didn't really think that that was a thing that we should do, but
I think this podcast is a blooper reel.
That's probably a good point. We don't need additional. No one wants to hear more.
At any rate, this is Megan.
And this is Taylor.
And it has been a hell of a month week.
Girl, this week has been a year
and it's over, and I couldn't be happier that it's just over. Like
the amount of relief and just like I feel it's so nice to just feel.
You didn't notice we're a little left leaning, but yeah.
In case you didn't notice,
we're just a little bit left leaning.
Oh my god. Just I feel like the nightmare is coming to a close.
I know. I'm proud of us as a nation for electing somebody, even though I'm sure we're gonna get some hate mail saying that there's voter fraud and stuff. But
faux shizzle. Well, hey,
you know what?
If there's voter fraud, then
you write us in and you tell us. You write us in and you tell us. Yep.
You send us the evidence and we'll get it over to Rudy and let him know.
Oh my god, stop. Now we're gonna lose so many people.
At Four Seasons Landscaping Company.
I really want to take a field trip there.
Oh my gosh. Somebody tweeted and they were like, I just want to be a fly on the wall and know what was said to the poor front desk person who got the phone call at the landscaping company. It was like, hi, can we do a press conference there? And they were like, I mean, I guess. Like, we have a parking lot and some, like, extension cords. We don't normally do that.
I mean, honestly, it's amazing. God love whoever picked up that phone. Seriously. You're the true MVP.
Oh, so many. The memes. The memes won the election.
TikTok. Honestly, TikTok was so funny, too. Oh, my God. It was dying.
It was incredible. Like, that was literally the only thing that got me through those, like, whatever, 4 days. Mm-hmm. It was literally the memes and TikTok. Thank goodness. And we just happened to be away during all of that. And we were like, we unintentionally were in a cabin in the middle of nowhere because we just wanted to be away from everything. And we were like, in case the Civil War breaks out, we'll be in Vermont. So at least they will be fine up there.
You know, I didn't realize this because I think we were young and politics are interesting to me, but obviously I'm not like a poli sci person in the slightest. And politics
used to be much more boring.
Yeah. But I didn't know that the 2000 election was similar kind of to this, but like not exactly. But there was that huge thing with voter fraud too, and like the recounting in Florida and everything.
Yeah. Well, so you want to know something interesting. Mm-hmm. So I think it's either two or three, don't quote me, two or three of the judges that he's elected since he's been president worked on that election.
Interesting.
And so there was some, you know, whether it's a conspiracy theory or not, whether there's truth to it or not, I don't know. But some people are saying that because he feared he might lose the election, he wanted to put those judges on the Supreme Court so that in case this happened, he could have them call the election in his favor.
Interesting.
So anyway, politics are very complicated and they're over now. I'm excited for politics to be more boring.
And you didn't come here for politics
because we don't know anything. Nope. Really, not much. Other than we have a lot of emotions.
Actually, and you know who else has a lot of emotions? Mother Nature. Because what the fuck is going on in New England right now?
Earthquake? Was that yesterday?
Yeah, yesterday.
That's insane.
But even like, so last Friday, it snowed. And it snowed like, there were 4 inches in my backyard, which is significant for the first snow because it never really sticks. And I was like, oh, it's never going to stick. My air conditioners were still in.
That's what we thought. We still have an air conditioner in at this
point. Yeah, I do too. And I used it last night because now it's so flipping hot.
It was like 79 degrees yesterday.
Oh my God. Yeah. I can't believe it. I'm like,
if you're not from New England, you won't understand this, but New England is crazy when it comes to weather. It's like up and down, up and down, up and down. Like you need like a full on hat and gloves, big jacket one day and the next day you're in shorts. When we were in Vermont though, it was like 58 degrees and there were just a bunch of like shirtless men. And I was like, this is also New England because like anywhere else in the country, people would be like all bundled up.
Oh yeah. Actually, ironically, I remember last year we went to San Francisco, which is where we're going today.
Ironically.
It was February and it was like 50 degrees outside. And I was like, this is the best. It was out in a tank top and like a pleather jacket. And everybody else was like, what the fuck is wrong with that girl? And I'm like, this is the best weather ever.
I know. Where's your jacket?
Everyone was like bundled up. Like, I think I walked by somebody with like a hat and gloves on and I was like, bro, sir, it is 55 degrees outside. This is like, we should go swimming right now.
Yeah, it's like the middle of the summer in New England. I can't believe that was just last year that we were in San Francisco.
Well, it was almost 2 years because it was February 2019.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Good point. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so now I'm like, my mind is just mush, and I just don't know when anything was.
Well, because it's been a decade in 2020. I think we lived all of the time.
Like, 2020 was... I think they accidentally crammed 10, what was supposed to be 10 years of activity into 1 year.
Yeah. So the rest better be smooth sailing, I'm telling you. Because I can't handle much more.
Flipping crossed. That's all I gotta say.
On the cute side. So I don't think Bodhi has ever seen snow before because he came from South Carolina.
I know.
He was so excited. He thinks it, there's so many really cute videos. Like, we had fun, like, throwing snowballs and stuff. It was really funny. Boy. And, but the funniest thing was, so he has his little jacket on. He's, like, strutting around in the snow. And then he goes to, like, sit down to relax. And his butt, like, ever so slightly touches the snow. And he's like, whoa, like, no,
that's cold. Why did you tell me it was cold?
I was like, sir, we can't sit in snow when we don't have snow pants on. It's very cold for the bum. Gosh.
Get him snow pants.
Are you kidding? You think I'm going to wrangle him into snow pants?
No, shorts.
We went to dog training yesterday.
Oh, yeah?
It was his first day of puppy school. I think, like, halfway through, he looked at me and was like, are you fucking kidding me right now? Why are we here? This sucks. This lady just keeps telling me what to do. Because, of course, they're like, you have to be, like, stern in, when you're, like, actually doing the training. And so I was like, and it's not like I just let him do whatever, but he's a very chill dog. His only issue is he gets really excited when there's another dog out.
Yeah.
And he wants to, like, go towards that dog and play. Like, he's not aggressive at all, but he wants to play and stuff. And
we all dream that that could be the biggest issue we have with our dogs.
Right. I mean, I know I'm very lucky in that sense, but it's like, you know, taking him on a walk, it's like he sees another dog and he starts doing, like, front flips and stuff. So that's what we're practicing. And he, like, didn't understand. I kept telling him to, like, leave it. And you have to, like, yank up on the leash a little bit to, like, signal them to, like, pick their head up kind of a thing. And he was just like, what the fuck? Like, I'm just trying to say hi to my friend, mom. Just like... I know, dude. So I know. He was like not having it. And then halfway through, so he's with other, he's two, and he's with other, like, puppies who are, like, 6 months plus. And like, they're all excited to, like, go and, like, run around after class. And he's like, I'm done. Leave me here. I just want to lay in the sun. And he did. And they were like, oh, Bodhi's on break. And I was like, Bodhi's done with this bullshit.
He's like, I'm out. I'm out, guys.
I was like, just wait till we come back next week and you'll be pissed.
Oh, he's so funny. He's the funniest dog. He's just so just like whatever.
He's very derpy. He's very dopey.
I love a derpy dopey dog. It's the best.
Very super sweet. Like, doesn't have a mean bone in his body.
He's just a big dope.
Yeah. I wish he was
a big dope.
Yeah. See, that's the thing is you have a smart dog. I don't have a smart dog.
They're so hard though.
I like my dope. I'm like, he's great. Like, I don't think I'm ever gonna, I think I'm one and done. I don't know if I can ever get another dog. Like, how am I gonna get a dog as good as him?
Jeff and I have been saying, like, our next dog has to be dumb. Like, we have to get a dumb dog next, because, like, Piper is so much work because she is too smart. Like, she's just too smart. And it's because she's so, like, she is, like, they always say dogs are, like, a perpetual two-year-old, but, like, she is, like, a fully formed two-year-old who, like, gives you back what you, like, so much, like, attention, like, oh my gosh, I don't even know where to begin. She is such a sweet girl.
That's the nice thing.
I love her, but she is too smart for her own good.
But this is the thing, right? Like, a dopey dog just wants to please you all the time. They're like, yes. Oh, if you're happy, I'm happy. A smart dog can make their own happiness, but it's usually not what you want them to do.
Correct.
Right? Okay, trying this again.
Yes. I got it cut off. If you couldn't, it's too bad you can't see me and you can't see the huge circles under my eyes. I just, like, look like I haven't slept in, like, 15 days. Which is true. I haven't slept in 7 weeks. But it is what it is. Oh, I can't hear you.
I swear to God, like, this has been a day. I don't know what is going on. We just need to get into San Francisco.
Let's just go to San Francisco. Because apparently we are.
I can't hear you. Yeah, you know what? I can't. You know what? Let's just, here we go. Here we go.
Here we go. So go to San Francisco.
Let's see if I can even find. Oh my God, I can't even find the page. Okay, here it is. All right, we're going to San Francisco.
Crisis averted, everyone.
Or just you kind of heard the crisis. But you know what? We ain't professionals, and I think we all know this. 6 months in, 7 months in, 7 months in.
Wow, look at us! Ow, mm-hmm. Ow.
There we go. All right, so. We are headed to San Francisco, which I was so excited to do San Francisco because we've both been there.
Yeah.
And it's gorgeous. Oh my God.
I was surprised we hadn't gone there already, honestly. I was like looking up stuff and I was like, what about San Francisco? Like, why? Like, I can't believe we haven't done San Francisco yet.
I'm so excited. Okay. So if you don't know San Francisco, you've probably been under a rock. But I will tell you about it anyway. So San Francisco is a peninsula located in San Francisco County in Northern California. It's commonly known for being the Bay Area of California. It's home to over 880,000 residents, making it the fourth largest city in California and the 16th largest in the US. San Francisco is home to a number of major businesses, including Gap, Fitbit, Airbnb, and the coveted Reddit. So I didn't know that they were all there.
Salesforce.
Yeah. There are more than 50 hills in the city, including Knob Hill and Russian Hill. And they're, oh my God, those hills, man. I landed in the airport and they like dropped me off the bottom of the hill. And I was like, what? So it's also home to a number of islands such as Treasure Island, Yerba Buena, Red Rock Island, and the infamous Alcatraz. I know, right? The earliest evidence of human habitation dates back to 3000 BC with the Yalemu and the Ojolon people. It was established by the Spanish in 1776 and gained its independence from Spain in 1821 and became a part of Mexico. The U.S. gained the territory in 1848 after the Mexican-American War, when Mexico was basically like, fuck it, just have it, it's fine. So obviously, like, this is mostly from Wikipedia and then data.io. I have it from that too. But now I'm not saying that most of this stuff isn't quoted, because it's mostly a word for word quote. However, these two quotes, I had to like literally express that they were quotes, because I was kind of chuckling to myself as I read them. So this is the first quote. Sorry about that. Choked. The California Gold Rush brought a flood of treasure seekers known as 49ers, as in 1849, which I love that they had to put that like I was in elementary school. They're like, as in the year, dumbass. So they came with their sourdough bread in tow. Prospectors accumulated in San Francisco, and the population grew from 1,000 to 25,000 in just a year, which is huge. Wow, but yeah,
crazy growth.
Yeah, and Brandon told me that I had to put in something about sourdough bread, so there it is. Okay. Then the second quote is, silver discoveries in 1859 further drove population growth. With hordes of fortune seekers streaming through the city, lawlessness was common. In the Barbary Coast section of the town gained notoriety as a haven for criminals, prostitution, and gambling. Is now just Nevada. Actually, it's not Nevada, it's Las Vegas. I shouldn't say all of Nevada. Poor Nevada, they've been shit on so much this week.
Nevada's air struggle bussing.
It had a rough ride. There was, I wish I could give him credit. I forget who it was, but there was this TikTok and it was so funny, Taylor. So, have you seen the one where it's like, wow, do, 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 where it's like, you like grow up and it's like, I used to be like this.
Oh,
and
yes,
now
yes.
Look at me. Okay, ready? So this kid, and I apologize if you know who this kid is, shout him out on our Insta, give him the credit he deserves, because it was so funny. And I just, if I can find it, I'll try and put the TikTok up on the Instagram. So it was so good. But it was basically, he was like, me at being held back in third grade because I was bad at math. And then it flipped to him and it's like, me, 21. A vote counter, and then it's like, wow.
It's like, this is great. Oh, I have to find that. That's awesome.
Well, if I can find it, we'll put it up on the Instagram, because this kid deserved the recognition, because it was gold.
There's some real like chef's kisses to the TikToks and the memes.
Oh, honestly, 100%. The real MVPs.
Also, I see that you're drinking a Nantucket something, and I just was curious what it is.
Nantucket Blue. It's a vodka soda. Who's blueberry vodka soda. Actually, is my tongue blue?
No, it's not.
Oh, really? Because this, can you see the liquid? No, it's like super blue.
Is it really blue? Who is that? So it's so Nantucket Blue is
Nantucket Blue is the company. Yeah.
Oh, I'm gonna have to do some Googles. Is that Cisco?
It's out of Nantucket, Mass. 888 Distillery.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. 888 is the company.
It's good.
That's awesome. Hopefully someday we'll be able to go back to Nantucket when, you know, we're not in the middle of a pandemic and we can go to 888.
Yeah, I'm going to get you just outed me. I'm going to get in trouble now because Brandon and I are doing this, like, we don't have any drinks over the week.
Sorry, Brandon. Oops. I outed Megan.
Whoops. I'm going to get a phone call when this eventually drops and he's going to yell at me. But it's okay. Actually, he won't yell at me, but he'll be like, I know your secret. Like, yeah, I know. It's not a secret when everybody knows. Okay. So, in the early 1900s, San Francisco was known for its flamboyant style, stately hotels, art scene, and ostentatious mansions on Knob Hill.
Wowie.
Additionally, the first North American plague epidemic was in San Francisco in 1900 to 1904. And here we fucking are again.
How ironic.
So it's not a plague. It's, you know, whatever. Yeah. But it still sucks just as much. Okay. San Francisco is known as the center of liberal activism in the U.S. The hippie counterculture movement was started in San Francisco. It's also home to the sexual revolution, the peace movement, which is the opposition to the Vietnam War, the summer of love, and the gay rights movements. And they have like the mass, I wonder if the first pride was there. I don't know, but I wonder if it was because I know that they have like huge pride events out there.
That's so interesting. I didn't realize that so many of those things started there. I think that's really fascinating.
Well, I'm not 100%. I know that the hippie culture did. I don't know if all of those things started in San Francisco, but they were like big in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Like there were big hubs of it. But if you think about like, there were a lot of gay men that were living in San Francisco. Like that was like their area, so to speak, that they would all kind of congregate to. Because then remember when the AIDS epidemic hit, how many of them were in San Francisco, and I think a lot of them died in that area because of the epidemic. As of 2020, San Francisco has the highest salaries, disposable income, and median home prices in the world at 1.7 million.
Insanity.
As well as the highest median rents. Yeah.
That's insanity.
The median home price is 1.7.
It'd be fancy, so I was right.
Yeah, you were correct. And then the median household income is only 112,000, which it's sad.
Yeah, that you're correct. It's sad. The world is sad. Everything's sad. Everything is very sad. So let's
see. There was a bright spot this week, don't forget.
This is the bright spot in 2020.
But yeah, that's San Francisco, my friend.
Thank you for educating us a bit on San Francisco. I miss San Francisco, honestly.
Oh my God, I know. I want to go back. I want to go to Napa Valley for real this time.
I know.
Not accidentally hungover.
Oh, I know. Seriously, that was bad. That was that was unfortunate. Yeah, I mean, I used to be in San Francisco at least once a month for like a while. I don't know, that whole like a year I was there like once a month at least, maybe twice a month. So it kind of felt like my second home. I felt like I really was starting to get to know it really well. I miss it. I miss I'm trying to think of like the hotel I stayed at, because I think I stayed in this like the literally because I was traveling so much.
It was Union Square. The Marriott Union Square.
Okay, so I must just stay there every time, because I tried to always stay at the same, like the same hotel or same type of hotel every time I visited, like when I would go on my business trips to Seattle, San Francisco, Charlotte, etc. Because then it didn't feel so much like it, like, because if you go with the same brand and you go, even if it's not the same hotel, the room will be like practically the same. And so then it feels like you're just like visiting this place that you always go to over and over again. So you feel less homesick.
Oh. So,
travel tip, if you're traveling a ton for work and you're feeling like crazy and feeling like you can't, like you're like away from home so much, stay at the same brand and same location if you can. And everything will be so familiar that it'll just feel like you're visiting like your like the second home that you have or whatever. Travel tip from Taylor.
Travel tip in a travel-less world.
In a travel-less world. So when we can travel again, you can use that tip. You're welcome.
Good Lord.
So we are headed to San Francisco. And so I told Megan a couple times that I had so much research to do that it was taking me a long time. I was a little overly optimistic as a new mom to be like, I'm going to cover this crime. So.
Sorry, I'm the one who's always late, so it doesn't matter.
So my sources, I used, of course, Wikipedia, History, biography.com, and then this is also covered on the Cults podcast. They do a much better job, much more comprehensive. They are generally just amazing. I love the Cults podcast. So, we go. So, the People's Temple of the Disciples of Christ, commonly shortened to the People's Temple, was an American new religious movement which existed between 1955 and 1978. It was originally founded in Indianapolis, Indiana, by Jim Jones. The People's Temple spread a message that combined elements of Christianity with communism and socialist ideology with an emphasis on racial equality. After Jones moved the group to California in the 1960s and established several locations throughout the state, including its headquarters in San Francisco, the temple forged ties with many left-wing political figures and boasted 20,000 members. So I thought that this was kind of an interesting one to tackle because of just like everything going on in our world right now. Obviously this is a very extreme thing that happened. Don't necessarily, I'm going to define some terms in here that are a little bit complicated. I think that maybe people don't know the definition of. So Jones was born on May 31st, 1931 in rural Indiana. In the early 50s, he began working as a self-ordained Christian minister in small churches around Indianapolis.
Did you say self-ordained?
I did say self-ordained. I'm so glad you picked up on that.
So like, can I knight myself and shit? Because I would really like to be a knight. Or you know what? I'd like to be a duchess.
Go for it. I mean, self-ordained Duchess Megan of...
I am the Princess of Cratchit Mountain.
And now you're the self-ordained Duchess of Cratchit Mountain. You're welcome.
I'd like a new mountain. I'll be the Duchess of Wildcat now.
Ooh, I like that. Rawr. Mm-hmm.
Rawr.
So, in order to raise money to start a church of his own, the charismatic Jones tried various ventures, including selling live monkeys door to door.
I bet that was lucrative.
Yeah, everyone's like, yes, how did you know? I've always wanted a live monkey.
Do you know who he would get in that ploy?
Who?
You.
Oh, me?
You yes. Take one look and be like, oh my God, so cute.
Jeff, I mean, it's so true. Like, one. If you were like, I'd be like... Is it okay though, like if I take this monkey, like what happens if I adopt this monkey? I know this is very illegal and I want it to be happy and a happy monkey.
How do I give this monkey a good life?
How do I give the monkey a good life? Can you imagine Piper with a monkey?
We would teach the monkey how to ride Piper. We get him like a little saddle and shit.
Piper would be, she probably would love it, honestly, because the monkey would be crazy and she'd be crazy and they would just be crazy together. And I'd just be like, you guys do your thing. I'm just going to sit here and drink my wine.
So Cody would probably be afraid of the monkey because he's afraid of the bunnies in the yard for a long time.
He'd be like, what the heck is that thing?
He'd be like, oh my God, guys.
Maybe he'd be like, it's an extra hairy human. Like, you'd just think it was like a little baby hairy human. Maybe. So before forming a church, Jim Jones had become enamored with communism and was frustrated by the harassment communists received in the U.S. during the Red Scare. This, among other things, provided provided inspiration for Jones, as he described in many, many recordings that they have of Jim Jones. So I wanted to define a couple of things that come up in this story. I think I took out the part about Marxism because it's just, there was just like so much information, but I do define that as well. So communism is a political theory derived from Karl Marx, advocating class war and leading to a society in which all property is publicly owned and each person works and is paid according to their abilities and needs. So that's communism. Socialism is an economic and political system. It is an economic theory of social organization. It believes that that the means of making, moving, and trading wealth should be owned or controlled by the workers. So basically all of this just goes back to like the worker. It's essentially the opposite of capitalism. It's focused on giving back to the little people, right? So I just felt like it was important
to the little people.
Oh, the little people. I felt like it was important to define those things. I think sometimes they're like these big scary terms and nobody actually knows what they mean. Because I think in theory, there's a lot of good. I mean, right? There's a lot of good ideals that come out of this stuff. And I think that sometimes it gets twisted.
I'm pretty convinced that you can fuck up any political system. You can fuck up socialism and be a douche about it. You can fuck up capitalism and be a douche about it. You know what I mean? Like,
if you have the right person in power, you can mess up everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I will define Marxism. So Marxism, which I wasn't, even though I learned about Karl Marx in, I think I learned about him in like psychology class is where I think I learned about him. But so Marxism is a social, political, and economic philosophy named after Karl Marx. It examines the effect of capitalism on labor production and economic development and argues for a worker revolution to overturn capitalism in favor of communism. So I remember when I learned about Marxism, I remember it being in my mind's eye, I remember it being portrayed as something really, really negative. Reading that,
yeah,
the definition of that, I'm like, why was it like, and I remember people being like, I'm a Marxist. And I remember being like, oh my gosh, that's like a bad thing. But like reading that definition, I'm like, I'm not totally sure why that's bad. But like we just said, you can mess
truthfully,
up.
I don't know enough about anything politics, but you know who would know is my work husband, Ray. So I'm going to ask him.
Perfect. And
maybe I'll have an update if I can remember.
Love it. Yeah, I mean, I learned about this back in high school. So this, we're talking many, many years ago. So my memory of this is probably way off, but this, the definition of these things and some of the, you know, some of the things that are happening in this world, I'm just like, ugh. Anyway, not as bad as they seem, basically is the moral of that story. So, bap-be-da-ba-bap-bap. Jones opened his first People's Temple Church in Indianapolis in the mid-50s. His congregation was racially integrated, something unusual at the time for a Midwestern church. I mean, this was the 50s. Mm-hmm. In the mid-60s, Jones moved his small congregation to Northern California, settling first in Redwood Valley in Mendocino County. In the early 70s, the preacher, Jones, relocated his organization's headquarters to San Francisco and also opened a temple in LA. So in San Francisco, Jones became a powerful figure. He curried favor with public officials and the media, donated money to numerous charitable causes, and delivered votes for various politicians at election time. People's Temple ran social and medical programs for the needy, including a free dining hall, drug rehabilitation, and legal aid services. So it's,
Why can't we just be good? Like,
I know.
How come everything has to get so fucked up? Because that sounds so wonderful at first.
That's, and that's the thing. Like, that's the thing. Like, when you look, so I think, so I want to go back to, like, those definitions of those things that we talked about in the beginning. Like, he had a really strong message about communism and socialism that, and he practiced, like, this really positive version of it. And then he totally, like, got power hungry and used it to, like, and so I think things like this, like People's Temple and like other really horrible things that have happened, can like put so much like shade on things that actually, this is not the ideology that like many like people will, you know, a negative thing will come of this stuff. So like, this is awesome what they did at the beginning and why people joined. I can totally see why they did.
It's so sad. It really is. Cause it, you're right. It's that, I'm sure it's, he rose to power. He got a lot of power. He really liked having that power. So he did whatever he could to keep it.
Yep.
And he totally lost sight of what he actually was trying to do in the beginning.
Yeah. Absolute power corrupts. Absolutely. It's just people like this getting into power are scary because they'll just, even if they come in with good intentions, it's not going to pan out. So Joan's message of social equality and racial justice attracted a diverse group of followers, including idealistic young people who wanted to do something meaningful with their lives. So as Joan's congregation grew, estimations of the group size vary. A 1977 expose by New West Magazine put the number of People's Temple members at 20,000. So it was rather large. But as the congregation grew, negative reports began to surface about the man referred to as quote unquote father by his followers. So once we start to get into like that territory, we start to go down the culty path.
You know who else calls their leader father? The Catholics. Tell me I'm wrong.
You're not incorrect. You are not incorrect.
And I don't have anything against the Catholic religion. I don't. There are plenty of wonderful people there. And then there are some people that
Megan
I'm like,
and I both grew up in that space. And so we are very familiar with all of it. So
I really hope my parents aren't listening to this one because I'm blacklisted from the family.
Yep. Yep, 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 yep. Speaking of cults, completely side note. If you have
family?
No, not my family. I mean, maybe, but I don't think so. But maybe that's because I'm in it. I'm brainwashed. But if you haven't watched The Vow about next year.
Yes!
Oh my.
I haven't completely finished it yet, but yes. And then Wondery has a podcast about it too, Breaking Nexium. Incredible.
Oh my gosh, so good. And that's how I got exposed to Nexium, was through that Escaping Nexium podcast.
Yes.
And when I saw this pop up and like, you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic and we have nothing better to do. And also like I'm sitting on the couch for hours on end, like holding my clingy newborn, feeding her. So I decided like
stage five clinger.
Let's watch this. Like, let's just binge it. So I just watched it in like a day and a half. Wait until you get to the last episode. I had to replay the last like minute of the last episode to Jeff twice so that he could hear how it ends. Just wait.
Oh shit.
Hope that's enough of a cliffhanger for everyone who hasn't watched The Vow. Go
nervous.
Watch it right now. Listen to me.
I'm nervous.
I am in charge here.
120 years?
I'm the father. Yes. 120 years.
Damn.
I know.
I'm so sad that Allison Mack got all caught up in it. I fucking loved Smallville.
I honestly feel really bad for her. Like she just doesn't.
Yeah, I'm at the point now where it seems like she got really swept in. I mean, she is culpable. Like she did shit too.
Yeah, she definitely did. But yeah, no, she's totally under his control. It's very, 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 very sad.
We'll have to do an episode just on Nexium because it's so intricate and it was a lot of really wealthy people.
Yes. Very good point. Mm-hmm. Okay. So.
The fancy cults.
The fancy cults. We could have a series. Oh, like a little series. I like a little series.
I think that's like the only one, Taylor, but okay.
Oh. There's gotta be others. No, wasn't the Rajneesh, wasn't that also a lovely
one? Oh yeah. Well, yeah, because remember he would drive with his Rolls Royce.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Anyway.
Oh man. So, I gotta start my own cult.
The cult of Megan.
I won't kill anybody. I'll be really nice too.
The cult of the Duchess.
Honestly, it just keeps getting better. Like, the longer I'm in quarantine, man, the plans just keep going up. I went from a princess. I went to a layman, to a princess, to a duchess, and now I'm like...
You're a cult leader now. You've elevated.
I think the term is escalated.
You've escalated. Former members described being forced to give up their belongings, homes, and even custody of their children. So this is where things start to go downhill. We went from feeding the poor and the needy to taking their children. Not good. They told of being subject to beatings and said Jones staged fake cancer.
Oh, that's no. See, that is that is never. You're just asking for real cancer if you do that.
Yep, that's a hard no. Hard no. So Jones and Temple members knowingly faked healings because they found that the increased faith generated financial resources to help the poor and finance the church. These quote-unquote healings involved chicken livers and other animal tissue claimed by Jones to be cancerous tissues removed from the body. So they were just, it was really just falling apart at this point.
I have a couple questions, but I don't think you can answer them.
Probably not. Where did they get it? I don't know. Faced with unflattering media attention and mounting investigations, the increasingly paranoid Jones, who often wore dark sunglasses and traveled with bodyguards, invited his congregation to move with him to Guyana, where he promised them they would build a socialist utopia. Not.
Danger, anyway. Danger.
Danger. We are in danger. In 1974, a small group of Jones's followers went to Guyana to establish an agricultural cooperative on a tract of jungle in the tiny nation. So Guyana, which gained its independence from Great Britain in 1966, is the only country in South America with English as its official language. So it was just a location of convenience. In 1977, Jones...
It's in South America, you said?
South America, yep. And English is its official language. Because it was with Great Britain. Only 1966 is when it was gained its independence. So pretty recently.
Well, yeah. Actually, Britain had a lot of places, like, up until World War II and then even past World War II.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so true. In 1977, Jones and more than 1,000 temple members joined them and moved to Guyana. However, Jonestown did not turn out to be the paradise their leader had promised. Surprise, surprise. He probably brought the monkeys with him.
He brought the monkeys
with him. All the live monkeys. He never sold any of the live monkeys, and they just lived with him forever, and they all went to Guyana with him.
They're probably happy to go there.
They probably would be. Temple members worked long days in the fields and were subject to harsh punishment if they questioned Jones's authority. Never a good sign. Their passports and medications were confiscated. And they were plagued by mosquitoes and tropical diseases. So this is just not turning out to be.
I wonder if that was like the moment of panic for some people.
You would think, like second somebody tries to take your passport, not good.
Yeah.
Beep, bop, boop. Armed guards patrolled the jungle compound. Members were encouraged to inform on one another and were forced to attend lengthy late night meetings. Their letters and phone calls were censored.
Jones, oh, God.
Yeah. Jones, who by then was in declining mental health and addicted to drugs, had his... surprise.
Sorry, it was declining then?
Yes.
It wasn't gone.
No, it was... It was gone. They're being generous.
He's declined. Like
mental decline.
I think he like stepped off the side of the cliff and then just shot down.
Hard fall. He had his own throne in the compound's main pavilion.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was not good.
I am not gonna lie though, that sounds appealing to me. Not the cult thing, but I would like my own throne.
I mean, you are a princess and a duchess and a cult leader at this point, so you deserve a throne.
I'm getting out of control.
Please keep going. You're grabbing power.
Yeah, you're right. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is oof. I'm gonna tell Brandon when he gets home. Yeah. I need a throne.
Tell him that. He'll build you one. He also compared himself to Jesus Christ.
Oh God! All right, I'd never do that.
But. Yeah, when people start comparing themselves to God and Jesus and other like things like that, it's a problem. He was convinced the government, the media, and others were out to destroy him. So strange. Who does all of this sound like?
Fake news. Fake news.
Fake news. He also required People's Temple's members to participate in mock suicide drills in the middle of the night.
Oof.
Yeah, this is where things start to take a turn. Leo Ryan, a U.S. representative from California, heard from some of his constituents that their family members were being held against their will in Jonestown and decided to go there to investigate. Oh, Ryan arrived in Guyana in November 1978 with a delegation that included news reporters and photographers, along with concerned relatives of some of the People's Temple's members. On November 17th, the congressmen and reporters were welcomed to Jonestown compound to their surprise with a dinner and evening of entertainment. Jones even agreed to meet with reporters. However, during the visit, some People's Temple members asked Ryan's group to help get them out of Jonestown. On November 18th, Ryan and his group, which also included a small contingent of People's Temple defectors, left Jonestown. While waiting at a nearby jungle airstrip, they were ambushed by gunmen sent by
Jones. Oh, God.
Yeah. Ryan was killed, the congressman.
Oh, wow.
Yep. Along with a reporter and a cameraman from NBC. A photographer from the San Francisco Examiner and a female People's Temple member who were attempting to leave.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah. So obviously bad. And it gets worse. It gets so much worse.
Oh, God.
So the same day as the murders at the airstrip, Jones told his followers that soldiers were coming for them and were going to torture them. He ordered everyone to gather in the main pavilion and commit what he termed a revolutionary act. The youngest members of the People's Temple were the first to die. This is just.
Trigger warning.
Yeah, trigger warning. I might cry. Okay. I actually can't even read this. So don't even. The youngest ones were basically murdered by their parents. So,
oh, God.
So just don't even. I'm not even gonna tell you. I can't even read it, honestly. So Jones had reportedly obtained a jeweler's license at some earlier point, which enabled him to stockpile cyanide, which is how this happened. Adults then lined up to drink the poison-laced concoction while armed guards surrounded the pavilion. This historic event is the source of the phrase, drinking the Kool-Aid.
Mm-hmm.
When Guyanese officials arrived at Jonestown compound the next day, they found it carpeted with hundreds of bodies. Many people had perished with their arms around each other. Jim Jones, age 47, was found in a chair, dead from a single bullet wound to the head, most likely self-inflicted. The death toll at Jonestown on November 18th, 1978 was 909 people. A third of them were children.
Oh.
Yeah. A few people managed to escape into the jungle that day, while at least several dozen more People's Temple members, including several of Jones's sons, were in another part of Guyana at the time. In total, only 33 survived.
Oh my God.
A terrifying recording of the event known as the Death Tape helped investigators understand what happened that night. Researchers also found over 1,000 recordings of propaganda, conversations, and sermons that painted a gruesome picture of the activity of People's Temple.
Oh my God. Can you imagine being the investigator to watch that?
I cannot. So I've listened to the Death Tape. It's horrific.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's really good.
I didn't know it was like public.
Yeah, you can listen to it. I think some of the podcasts that I've listened to about People's Temple give snippets of it. It's sad. It's very sad. People's Temple is really sad. But if anything, this just gives you drinking the Kool-Aid. Be aware of what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Be aware of what's going on.
And how easy it is to get wrapped up in this stuff so fast.
So that's People's Temple. I highly, highly, highly recommend that you listen to the cult episode about it. It's really, really well done. I think it's actually there's multiple episodes because there's just so much to cover.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, what do you got for us that hopefully is a little bit uplifting?
It's uplifting, but it's better.
Better than this. I'll take it.
So, of course, I had to do Alcatraz because when we went on that trip, I went and toured Alcatraz. And
I forgot you did that.
Oh, if anyone ever gets the opportunity, take it. It's an incredible tour. And it's all self-guided. You like listen and you walk through different areas. It is so cool to see and to hear the history of it and all of that. It's awesome. But essentially, I remember they do talk about escape attempts from Alcatraz, because obviously it was supposed to be like this inescapable prison, essentially. And for the most part, it was. And it also has, you know, more of a history to it. But basically, I found this article from Alcatraz History, which is really cool, and I would definitely go and check it out. But it's called Alcatraz Escape Attempts. Okay. So, where is the history? Full history. Wow, I am really on point today. All right, we're just gonna do the escapes because
I'm on point every day.
Megan, dude, I remember, it's like, oh, this is such a cool little intro. Basically, it's like Alcatraz wasn't always a prison. It essentially, I think it was a fort first. Then it became a prison in the early 1900s. Then there was actually a Native American like sit-in, so to speak. Like they basically took over the island. Yeah, it's super interesting. Now it's just basically like government land, and you can go and tour, and it's cool. So over the 29 years, 1934 to 1963, that the federal prison operated, 36 men, including two who tried to escape twice, were involved in 14 separate escape attempts. 23 were caught, 6 were shot and killed during their escape, 2 drowned. 2 of the men who were caught were later executed in the gas chamber at California State Prison at San Quentin for their role in the death of correctional officer in the infamous May 2nd to 4th, 1946 Battle of Alcatraz escape attempt, which also, if you look up Battle of Alcatraz, you can definitely find podcasts that do a great job talking about it, because that's also very interesting.
Interesting.
Whether or not anyone succeeded in escaping from Alcatraz depends on the definition of a successful escape. Is it getting out of a cell house, reaching the water, making it to land, or reaching land and not getting caught? Officially, no one ever succeeded in escaping from Alcatraz, although to this day, there are 5 prisoners listed as missing and presumed drowned. So here's a summary of the 14 escape attempts. April 27th, 1936. While working his job burning trash at the incinerator, Joe Bowers began climbing up over the chain link fence at the island's edge. After refusing orders to climb back down, Bowers was shot by a correctional officer stationed in the West Road Guard Tower, fell about 50 to 100 feet to the shore below, and then he died from his injuries. December 16th, 1937. While working at the mat shop in the Model Industries building, Theodore Cole and Ralph Rowe had, over a period of time, filed their way through the flat iron bars on the window. I just think about like the little nail file. It's like, tick, 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 tick. After climbing through the window, they made their way down to the water's edge and disappeared into San Francisco Bay. This attempt occurred during a bad storm, and the bay's currents were especially fast and strong.
Most people believe that Roe and Cole were swept out to sea. Officially, they are listed as missing and presumed dead. Okay, note to self. If you're going to escape Alcatraz, don't do it in the middle of a fucking storm.
They were like, we have no choice. We have to do it now.
Maybe they did. Like, I don't know why you would... I don't know. Never. Personally, I would be like, ugh, no thanks. This is too much for me. Okay, May 23rd, 1938. While at work in the woodworking shop in the Model Industries building, Thomas Limerick, Jimmy Lucas, and Rufus Franklin attacked an unarmed correctional officer, Royal Klein, with a hammer, and Klein unfortunately died from his injuries. The three then climbed the roof in an attempt to disarm the correctional officer in the roof tower. The officer, Harold Stites, shot Limerick and Franklin. Limerick died from his injuries. Lucas and Franklin received life sentences for Klein's murder. Number four, January 13th, 1939. Arthur Doc Baker, Dale Stamphill, William Martin, Henry Young, and Rufus McCain escaped from the isolation unit in the cell house by sawing through the flat iron cell bars and the bending tool-proof bars on a window. They made their way down to the water's edge. Correctional officers found the men at the shoreline on the west side of the island. Martin, Young, and McCain surrendered, while Barker and Stamphill were shot when they refused to surrender. Barker died from his injuries. So this would be me getting to the shoreline. I'd be like, fuck this. I'm done. I'm not getting in the fucking water. It's freezing. May 21st, 1941. Joe Kretzer, Sam Shockley, Arnold Kyle, and Lloyd Barkdahl took several correction officers hostage while in the working industries area. The officers, including Paul Madigan, who later became Alcatraz's third warden, were able to convince the four that they could not escape, and they surrendered. But the hats off to you. They're like, bitches, yeah, it's just, you can't do this.
Like, you've taken them hostage, and they're just like, guys, come on, like, let's be real here.
I definitely heard about the first one. I think there's like a Discovery Channel like reenactment of that one somewhere.
There's another one too where some people are convinced they made it to like South America or whatever, because it's coming up in a little bit.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so it wasn't that first one, it's another one.
Yeah,
so similar. Okay.
Yeah. So April 14th, 1943, James Boardman, Harold Brest, Floyd Hamilton, and Fred Hunter took two officers hostage. Why do they keep taking people? It doesn't work. 2 years ago, they were like, dude, stop. Just don't.
If you fail, try again. Or
in the same method.
You could do the other one where it's like, what is that other phrase that you can say about like, trying something more than once and it makes you insane?
Oh, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
Yes,
this is what it is. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
So the four climbed out a window and made their way down to the water's edge. One of the hostages was able to alert other officers to the escape, and shots were fired at Boardman, Brest, and Hamilton, who were swimming away from the island. Hunter and Brest were both apprehended. Boardman was hit by gunfire and sank below the water before officers were able to reach them. His body was never recovered. That is terrible. Hamilton was initially presumed drowned. However, after hiding out for 2 days in a small shoreline cave, Hamilton made his way back up to the industries area where he was discovered. He like basically came back.
These people. He's like,
no fucking thank you.
These people. I can't.
So, August 7th, 1943, Huron Ted Walters disappeared from the prison laundry building. He was caught at the shoreline before he could even attempt to enter San Francisco Bay.
Dude.
July 31st, 1945, one of the most ingenious attempts, John Giles was able to take advantage of his job working at the loading dock, where he unloaded army laundry sent to the island to be clean. Over time, he stole an entire uniform. Dressed in the uniform, Giles calmly walked aboard an army launch to what he thought was freedom. He was discovered missing almost immediately. Unfortunately for Giles, the launch was headed to Angel Island and not San Francisco as he had hoped.
As Giles set foot on Angel Island, he was met by correctional officers who returned him to Alcatraz. That one I remember them talking about.
Yes. So like, close.
Oh, honey.
So close, but yet so far.
May 2nd through 4th, 1946, known as the Battle of Alcatraz, the Alcatraz blast out. Six prisoners were able to overpower cell house officers and gain access to weapons and cell house keys, in effect taking control of the cell house. Their plan began to fall apart when inmates found they did not have the key to unlock the recreation yard door. Shortly thereafter, prison officials discovered the escape attempt. Instead of giving up, Bernard Coy, Joe Kretzer, Marvin Hubbard, Sam Shockley, Miran Thompson, and Clarence Carnes decided to fight it out. So Sam Shockley and Joe Kretzer, I think they were two people that we talked about before too, right? Who tried to escape? I'm pretty sure.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Eventually, Shockley, Thompson, and Carnes returned to their cells, but not before the officers taken hostage were shot at point-blank range by Kretzer, encouraged by Shockley and Thompson. One officer, William Miller, died from his injuries. A second officer, Harold Stites, who stopped the third escape attempt, was shot and killed attempting to regain control of the cell house. About 18 officers were injured during the escape attempt. The U.S. Marines were eventually called in to assist. And on May 4th, the escape attempt ended with the discovery of the bodies of Coy, Kretzer, and Hubbard. Shockley, Thompson, and Carnes stood for trial in the death of the officers. Shockley and Thompson received the death penalty and were executed in the gas chamber. Carnes, aged 19, received a second life sentence. And I'm pretty sure he received a second life sentence because he spared one of the officers' life. Like, he saw one of the officers was still breathing, and he was told to, like, go through and cut all their necks. Oof. And kill them, and he didn't. He, like, spared them, and the officer survived and told them, so his life was saved.
Wow.
Okay, we're at number 11. We're almost done. July 23rd, 1956, Floyd Wilson disappeared from his job at the dock. After hiding for several hours among large rocks on the shoreline, he was discovered and surrendered.
Oh, he didn't even get that far. What was the plan?
September 29th, 1958, while working on garbage detail, Aaron Burgett and Clyde Johnson overpowered a correctional officer and attempted to swim from the island. Johnson was caught in the water, but Burgett disappeared. An intensive search turned up nothing, but his body was found floating in the bay 2 weeks later. June 11th, 1962, made famous by the Clint Eastwood movie Escape from Alcatraz, Frank Morris and brothers John and Clarence Anglin vanished from their cells and were never seen again. A fourth man, Alan West, believed by some people to have been the mastermind, was also involved. However, he was still in his cell the next morning when the escape was discovered. An investigation revealed an intricate escape plot that involved homemade drills to enlarge vent holes, false wall segments, realistic dummy heads complete with human hair, placed in the beds so the inmates would not be missed during their nighttime counts. The three men exited through vent holes in the rear wall of their cell. They had enlarged the vent holes and made false vent/wall segments to conceal their work. Behind the rear wall of the cells is a utility corridor that had locked steel doors at either end. The men climbed the utility pipes to the top of the cell block and gained access to the roof through an air vent. The men had previously bent the iron bars that blocked the air vent. They then climbed down the drain pipe on the northern end of the cell house and made their way to the water. It's believed they left from the northeast side of the island near the powerhouse/quartermaster building. They used prison-issued raincoats to make crude life vests and a pontoon-type raft to assist their swim. A cell house search turned up the drills, heads, wall segments, and other tools, while the water search found two life vests, one in the bay, the other outside on the Golden Gate, or the one in the bay, the other outside the Golden Gate. Oars and letters and photographs belonging to the Anglins that had been carefully wrapped to be watertight, but no sign of the men was found. Several weeks later, a man's body dressed in blue clothing similar to the prison uniform was found a short distance from up the coast from San Francisco, but the body was too badly deteriorated to be identified. Morris and the Anglins are officially
listed as missing and presumed dead, but some people claim that they actually lived. And then the last one, December 16, 1962, John Paul Scott and Darrell Parker bent the bars of a kitchen window in the cell house basement, climbed out, and made their way down to the water. Parker was discovered on a small outcropping of rock a short distance from the island. Scott attempted to swim towards San Francisco, but the currents pulled him out to sea. Ooh, he was found by several teenagers on a rock near Fort Point beneath the Golden Gate and was taken to the military hospital at Presidio Army Base, suffering from shock and hypothermia before being returned to Alcatraz. One of the many myths about Alcatraz was that it was impossible to swim from the island to the mainland because of sharks. In fact, there are no, quote, man-eating sharks in the San Francisco Bay, only small bottom-feeding sharks. The main obstacles were the cold temperatures averaging 50 to 55 degrees, the strong currents, and the distance to shore, at least 1.25 miles. Prior to the federal institution opening in 1934, a teenage girl swam to the island to prove it was possible. The fitness guru Jack LaLanne once swam the island pulling a rowboat.
Oh my gosh.
And several years ago, 2 10-year-old children also made the swim. Who the fuck is doing this?
Also, who are these parents letting the 10-year-olds make the swim? And also, like,
if a person is well trained,
like, can you believe that they actually made it? Like, all these people were like, I'm gonna wait here hiding in the stones and not swim across, and then all these people prove that you can do it.
Yeah, I yeah, like a 10-year-old child. But yeah, so the
so interesting.
I hope that the Frank Morris and the brothers actually made it out, because they didn't hurt anybody. Well, actually, who knows what their crimes were? Maybe they were like,
yeah, I don't know what their crimes were, but like, yeah, you hope that like somebody like made it.
Well, they didn't hurt any of the guards or anything.
No, exactly.
So yeah,
that was slightly lighter than Jonestown, so I accept.
My apologies for like losing the background info, but it's very easy to look up the background info on Alcatraz. So
totally
go and, you know, go look take that a gander. Up. Take a gander.
You have the Google. You can do that. Well, I gotta go feed a very hungry baby.
Oh, yes, that's important to keep them alive.
Yes, to keep them living, it is true.
It's very hard to explain when they don't.
Yes.
Yes. Then you end up on our podcast.
Yes. So thank you guys for tuning in, for listening.
Yep, we much appreciate it. And as always, if you have any suggestions, let us know. Send us a DM on Instagram. And yeah,
we want to hear from you. And we'll see you next time.
See you guys.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to rate and subscribe. See you next time.